All right, well, as you may know, the plan for this morning was for Nate to finish up with part two of what he began last week, which would be this series, Arguments for the Resurrection of Jesus. However, as I explained earlier this morning, he was taken to the hospital yesterday battling this kidney stone and isn't able to be here. Actually, I would put this in the same league as my dog ate my homework. You know, I think he would just do anything to get out of, you know, just skip out on this. But regardless, I get the honors of filling in. And I had been actually starting to work on something that I was preparing for next Sunday. So this is actually what I'm going to share, far from being, it just wasn't really ready. And so now I was the one working up until 5 o'clock in the morning. Not really, but I was hoping that we would get 10 inches of snow last night so that I could be relieved of this. All right, because I would really like to have another week to prepare for this, not just organizationally, but also somewhat emotionally as well. So as Denny said to me this morning, when these sorts of things come up, you just need to tell people you get what you get, you know, you just get what you get. All right, well, a few weeks ago, it occurred to me that while I'm always calling up on members to share what we call personal reflections on Body Life Sundays, and we've done quite a few of these now over the years, I have never actually offered a personal reflection myself. Every time I come up to this podium, it's to present more or less some sort of teaching or sermon. And I seldom get into anything personal unless it's a story to illustrate something, and I do that about once every 3 or 4 years. And so today I'm going to take my turn at the whole personal reflection thing. This is going to be very different than what you're used to. And I'm going to share a real life experience that I've been through so that I can talk about the various things I've learned from it. The difference is on a Body Life Sunday, we hear from 3 different people, each taking their turn, and each one gets about 10 or 15 minutes. Today, I'm it, and I'm taking 30 minutes. Because this is going to be, I kind of like the idea that we have a smaller crowd today because this is going to be a lot more on a personal level than usual. Now, let me begin by determining whether my audience this morning will be warm and friendly or cold and stoic. I need to know that going in, because if it's going to be cold and stoic, I'm just folding my notes up and we're giving the benediction. I want you to answer the question honestly. How many of you would consider yourself to be an animal lover? Perhaps you have a pet, perhaps you've had pets in the past, you kind of get attached to them. Even if you don't have a pet, you like animals, and you would say that you have a favorable disposition toward them. All right, good. All right, I know what you guys are doing. yes. All right. I'm not going to ask for the hands of those who don't like animals. I already know there's 2 out there. Because I'm afraid that if I see too many people, that will mess with my mind during my message. So quite frankly, some of you will like what I share today and benefit from it, hopefully. Others, on the other hand, will think it's a complete waste of time. I know that will probably be the case, and others yet will be indifferent one way or the other. That's sort of like any sermon on any Sunday. So, you may remember a month ago or so, Nate taking the opportunity at the end of his sermon to inform our church body about a difficult time I was going through regarding the recent death of my pet dog, Sable. And I was a bit embarrassed when he shared this, and I even tried to stop him, thinking that this isn't the sort of thing we want to bring up in a church assembly. I also feared what kind of a precedent this might set, plus my own little battle with grief and all that. I mean, it did seem a bit childish to me. It was a little sheepish about the whole thing. But I appreciated Nate's compassion in all this and his desire to see the church body come along my side. And not just for me, but Terry as well, because she has taken all this equally hard. And so for all of you who have expressed support and sympathy, I just want to say thanks. What has amazed me in all this is just how hard it has been for me, because I've not expected anything like that at all, not in the least. I have had dogs all my life, and this wasn't the first time I've been through the death of a pet, and so I fully expected I'd be able to deal with it, even if it were to be unpleasant initially. And not only have I been surprised about how hard it has been, but also how long this grief continues to weigh me down. And because of this, it has been both frustrating and, again, even embarrassing. In fact, it's even a little embarrassing to bring it up this morning in this particular setting. If I were someone else interacting with me, I would be saying to this Wendell, get over it. You're almost 60 years old. What's wrong with you? It's just an animal. Think about others in our church who have lost spouses, parents, siblings, or children. I can reason with myself. I can argue with myself. I can even try to order myself to think this or feel that, but I just can't seem to fix this thing. I feel guilty when I grieve because it is just an animal, and I feel guilty when I don't grieve. Though just an animal, he was a dear friend and one that I miss terribly. And as I will explain a little later on, this turmoil and all the emotions are complicated by other factors, of which are actually a big part of the picture. So needless to say, I've been eager to resolve certain questions so as to find at least some relief one way or the other. How should one think about animals? Why did God make animals? What did he intend their relationship to man to be? What is the intrinsic value of animals? Are we to view them as disposable? May we kill them for any reason whatsoever? Food, sport, amusement? If not, then where are the parameters on the other end? That is, how far should we go to preserve their lives or to relieve their sufferings? How much is too much to spend at the vet? What about becoming emotionally attached to an animal? Is there anything in Scripture that might shed light on that, one way or the other? Related to the intrinsic worth question is this one. What does God think about grieving over the deaths of animals? Does he shake his head in disapproval when we do that sort of thing, or roll his eyes, so to speak? Or does he on some level affirm that? And of course, the question every child asks the first time he or she grieves the death of a pet: do animals have souls? Do their souls survive death? Will we see our animals, our pets, in the new creation? Well, answering these questions, even if I didn't like the answers, would, I believe, help me to put things in the right perspective, allowing me just to move on. If God loved Sable even more than I did, and he will be reunited with me in the eternal kingdom, then I can stop crying and move on, you know, even rejoice in that. If not, then let me wallow in my grief for another 40 days and 40 nights or 40 years. I need to know one way or the other. Now, as you may know, the Scriptures do not provide any direct answers to any of those questions. But at the same time, there are a number of broader theological principles that could be drawn upon for insights. And we might actually think of them as thought-provoking speculations. And speculations actually have their place as long as there's nothing in Scripture that would say, well, that can't be so, that speculation. That can't be so because of this. And if the speculation is affirmed, even indirectly by a larger principle or a concept promoted in Scripture, then that's helpful. I mean, all the better. And so this has been something I've pursued these past weeks, and I'm eager to share with you what I've learned, and actually that's what I'll be doing next Sunday. Today, in what we might call part one, I want to follow the personal reflection format and talk about my experience and the personal lessons I've learned from this, and in particular, how this particular ordeal may actually end up helping me grow spiritually. I believe that it has and will continue to, especially in my interaction with other people. So bear with me, especially those of you who don't like animals. As I need to set things up with a little background. In order to explain these personal lessons, it would be helpful to give you a small picture of what Sable is like and my interaction with him. And in fact, a good number of our folks here at Vendor House have met him and will have some sort of context to some of this. Sable was only 2 years old when he died 5 weeks ago, just coming out of his puppy stage, and that puppy stage was certainly a trying time in many ways. Some of you have been through that. And so here in recent months, we were beginning to enjoy the benefits of him obeying us better, not chewing up everything, not running off, no accidents in the house, and so on. And I've never really cared for poodles that much, but Sable was a poodle. Not the little kind that you see movie stars holding in their arms, but the big kind, what are called standard poodles. and they were actually bred for hunting. And Sable was a hunter. He was a high-energy dog, high-spirited, chasing and killing everything that moved. He ran fast. He ran hard. And I, not being a fan of poodles, didn't really like the typical poodle grooming, and so we had him groomed to look more like a black Airedale or a curly-haired black greyhound. And his official name, as registered with the American Kennel Club, was Sable the Amalekite. I wanted to call him Rabies. I thought that'd be a cool name for a dog, but Terry, I had a hard time getting her on board with that, so we agreed with Sable the Amalekite. Now, we got him as a puppy, and the first night I tossed and turned all night long, plagued with buyer's remorse. The next day I told Terry that I wanted to take him back, even if the owner would not refund the money. I didn't like the dog. I regretted getting him. Terry objected to all this, and she said, "We need someone happy in this home. And he brings happiness." And at that moment, he was standing, you know, below us, wagging his tail, looking happy, and so I caved in. Over the course of the next 2 years, he went from being a nuisance in my life to a close companion that I did everything with. He jumped in my truck when I ran errands. He sat at my feet when I wrote sermons. We chased each other inside the house and outside. We went on long walks virtually every day, sometimes going for all-day hikes at Salamone Forest, which was my most favorite thing to do, period. He slept on my bed at night, and though he was 65 pounds and could rest his paws on my shoulders, he still managed to lay on my lap when I watched the evening news. His death was the last thing I would have ever expected when I woke up on January 25th. I'll spare you the details, but basically he was the victim of a freak accident. We let him out to run that morning, and he came back with a severe puncture wound in his chest. He runs fast, he runs hard, and probably ran into something accidentally. What complicates the situation and further intensifies the emotions involved, and this now will all play a part in this whole picture, is that I was unwilling to spend the money to save him. He required emergency surgery on a weekend and then extended care in an animal hospital. Now, we were told that his chances were more favorable than not, but at the same time, there were no guarantees. The cost, we were told, would start at $3,000 and would go up from there. At the time, it seemed like the decision to put him down was the logical thing to do. He's just an animal. I can't justify spending money I don't have on saving an animal. Winters are always tight. We've had a lot of unexpected car repairs. This is money we would have had to borrow. The decision seemed quite obvious. In the past, when I've heard stories of pet owners spending that kind of money to save a pet, well, quite frankly, I would roll on my eyes. You know, it's just an animal. How can you justify that? If I were given a chance to do it all over again, I would now say, do whatever it takes. He's my best friend. Save him, regardless of the cost. When I made the decision, I completely underestimated how attached I was to him. And the thing is, it was never my intention to ever get that attached. I never looked at this dog and said, I don't have any friends, you know, nobody likes me. Will you be my friend? Will you bond with me and be my best buddy for life? You know, now in retrospect, I could have said that, and all that would have been true, but I'd never said that to my dog. Rather, the whole thing just happened naturally over the course of 2 years, and I didn't even realize any of this until after the fact. And so, the past weeks, quite frankly, I've been plagued with not only missing him terribly, which I do, but also feeling horribly responsible for betraying him. One can replace money. One can't replace a loyal companion. I should have spent the money. This regret has been a bitter fruit to eat. And again, the frustrating thing is that it seems so illogical to feel this way. But I'm just being straight with you. All my powers of logic and rational thinking that I could possibly muster up have been utterly powerless in subduing these strong feelings that I have. And so answering some of those questions I mentioned earlier, I believe, you know, would be helpful. My feelings are all over the place because I've not known how to think correctly about the situation. Should I grieve over the loss of a pet? Should I feel regret over my decision? I'd love to know what God would say about that. This then leads me to that, to the part about lessons that I've learned. The worst thing you can do in any hardship or suffering, of course, is to waste it. As James exhorts us, though such trials are not caused by God, they can be used by God to help us mature and become complete. And in this, I've come to recognize some things that have been good for me to recognize. And perhaps first on the list would be this. I am more sympathetic now toward those who struggle with this, trying to synchronize their beliefs with their feelings. This is something I've never struggled with before, and quite frankly, I've been at times impatient with in others. Many times over the years here, I've been in situations, as in the context of counseling, for instance, where I've spelled out in a logical, rational way certain facts that are obviously true. And the other person acknowledges those facts, but somehow still doesn't help that person feel any differently about the situation. This often comes up in discussions about forgiveness. A person has been hurt by someone else. We work through what forgiveness is, what it isn't. It's all straightforward. It's all clear as day. But at the end, the hurt feelings remain, which then seems to muddy things up for the other person. Another example would be doubts that people have about the faith itself. They know all the reasons why Christianity is true. They can actually articulate a compelling case of themselves to non-believers. But deep down, they're haunted with what we call emotional doubts. I've never had this. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, this is so, this is so, this is so. Why do you continue to feel this then? Well, lots of examples could be offered. The thing is, now I've had the opportunity of being on the other end of that. Try as I might, I simply cannot talk or reason my way out of these deep feelings that I have. And this actually has helped me to appreciate what others struggle with that in the past I've not appreciated. In fact, just last Sunday, I was talking to one of our folks here after the service who was sharing with me what he knew to be true about a situation with one of his relatives, and yet to his frustration still felt something differently. He could not get his emotions in line with his beliefs, and he was frustrated that he was powerless to change that. Now, in the past, in order to, you know, sort of offer some encouragement and patronizing comfort, I would have lied, saying, "I understand." This time, I wasn't lying when I said, "I understand. I understand that frustration." The second lesson I want to share is very similar. I would like to think that I can now better identify with those who suffer from what I will call acute regret. This has, again, been an especially difficult thing for me. If only I could go back and relive that day. And this remorse, it bites down hard in the most cruel ways and holds on with fierce tenacity. It's like a poison in my system. And it has caused me at times to think illogically. Now, fortunately, I'm able to see that it's illogic, but it's caused me to think illogically. For instance, even this morning, I would have to admit to you that it would have been easier to go out and borrow $6,000 if necessary, or even more, whatever it would take for the surgery and the extended care, and have Sable die in the effort than not to have tried at all. This not trying at all has driven me crazy. Now, we all make decisions that we think are the right ones at the moment, and they turn out bad. And you know, there's something in that decision-making process that we overlooked or underestimated. We can't take it back, even though we'd give anything to take it back. And I think that I will now be a bit more sympathetic to those who struggle with remorse from these sorts of, you know, big decisions that do go bad. One area where I believe this will prove to be especially helpful in is in regards to women who have had abortions or men who were involved in such decisions. There are many people who later regret that decision deeply, and oftentimes they talk openly about that. Now, I do not want to compare the death of my dog to that of an unborn child. My point here is that in the past, I would have processed such sharing on their part on a rather surface level, acknowledging the fact of the regret itself, and would have probably completely failed to actually appreciate the very real feelings of remorse that the person would be sharing. Simply put, if I can feel remorse over the decision to not save a dog, how much more remorse is felt by a mother who chooses to end the life of her baby. I actually pondered this quite a bit and realized just how much I've never appreciated what such women, or for that matter, men go through. Even though we know Jesus forgives and that there is healing for those who have had abortions, there continues to be at some level a certain pain, a certain darkness, a certain grief that simply cannot be smoothed over. And this is something I needed to be more sensitive to and hope that I now will be. Even if the decision to not save Sable was the right one, and all these feelings of regret are justified, the fact that are unjustified, the fact that I have felt this regret on such a deep level, I think has at least sensitized me a little bit better in this whole area. Now, on the flip side of this, this acute regret has actually caused me to reflect upon other regrets. Because this one has been so tough for me, the natural question then is, why haven't I felt this remorse to this degree before? Am I to believe that this is the worst thing I've ever done, the worst decision I've ever made? And actually, this is quite troubling because I have indeed done worse things by far and have certainly made worse decisions in the past. And on these, the ones who suffered at my expense were not animals or pets, but people. And so I've been forced to reflect on all of this. I should be far more troubled by the harm I have caused other people. My obligation to them is so much higher. As I look back, it seems that my typical response in those situations had not been remorse, but that of defending myself, of justifying my actions or words. I have here recently joked with others that the death of my dog has helped me to get in touch with my emotional side, something I didn't even know I still had. And so there may be hope for me yet, you know. I started to believe that I was just a machine. But it has also helped me to get in touch with that part of me that feels remorse and contrition. In this way, if I am sobered by the fact that I will feel such deep regret over the course of action that affects an animal, but often, you know, but I'm sobered by that fact, and sobered by that fact that I often feel so little over what affects other people. That's what's sobering. I don't think I said that very clearly, but I should be sobered by the fact that this has really troubled me, when I should be far more sobered by what harm I cause to others. And seeing this, I believe, will be helpful. There's yet another thing I've learned, benefited from in all of this, and it's one that I'm actually a little ashamed to admit. Until just a few days ago, I've overlooked something that should have been actually quite obvious. I keep thinking that if I could relive that dreadful day, that everything would be so much different. What I failed to see is that even if I were given such an opportunity, that my decision-making process would be off, because I would be going into it with my priorities off. Let me try to explain this. And this is an area I wish I had more time to work on, because trying to explain this point here doesn't seem to be as clean and tight as I'd hoped it would be. So again, think of what Denny said. You get what you get, but I'll try to be as clear as I can. It hit me, seriously hit me, that I've got things all turned around, and I didn't even realize it. If I could somehow relive that day, knowing what I know now, my highest obligation could not be, must not be, to Sable, or to my own desires, feelings of attachment to him, or even to what Terry would want. My first obligation would have to be, it must be, what would God have me do? Now, this is not an easy question to answer, but simply framing everything with that question at the top has to at least be the starting point. And even if that question cannot be answered easily or directly, that doesn't mean that the scriptures don't provide at least some guidance on a situation like this. Essentially, my first priority must be that of honoring God, not meeting these sentimental affections I feel toward a family pet. This then brings me back to some of those questions I asked earlier. How should one think about animals? Why did God make animals? What did he intend their relationship to man to be? What is the intrinsic value of animals? Are we to view them as disposable? How far should we go to preserve their lives or to relieve them of their sufferings? How much is too much to spend at the vet? And so on. The fact is, I've I've never developed a theology of animals. I've never thought about anything like that. Never heard of anyone doing it. I don't. I have several systematic theology books. None of them have a section called Theology of Animals. I actually thought it wasn't possible to do because there isn't anything in Scripture. I see now that I've actually been a bit Platonic in my thinking, that because animals are part of the world below, therefore God is indifferent about them. But the Scriptures are not silent. And even if there isn't enough in Scripture to build a complete system or to even answer most questions, that doesn't mean that the Scriptures have nothing to offer, because there are lots of references to animals, many of which could provide helpful input. And for that matter, very important, a theology about animals doesn't start with animals anyway. It starts with the person and nature of God. His very character should prove quite significant in helping us understand how he views animals. And it then follows that if we are to be like him, we will view them the same way he does. Not more than what they are, and not less than what they are. And so I've been compelled by this experience to do just that. I want to think biblically about animals so that I can act biblically toward them. And this must override all those other influences I've picked up all through my years that have conditioned my thinking. Things like the fact that I grew up in a home where my dad was a hunter and I went hunting with him. That's part of conditioning my thinking of animals, along with my own personal experience with pets, along with my first job working at a pig farm. I've come to understand that even that has shaped my understanding. And all that I've learned through the years from parents and schools and television and watching Walt Disney movies as a kid, all that's conditioned me, you know, from all that is sentimental to all that is utilitarian. Even if I can't provide the answers I think I need, I know that there is enough in Scripture to provide, at the very least, some foundational principles that will prove to be relevant. And again, this is the sort of thing I'm eager to share, which I will next week. Now, my decision back on January 25th may have ended up being the same. I can't say for sure as of today what I would do if faced with this again. I would simply say that from here on, I would hope that I would begin with the right question. Not, how attached am I to this animal? Not, is this too much money to spend? Not, which option will prove to be the least painful? But, is there anything in Scripture I need to consider first in working through this? I don't want to think of animals as more than what they are, nor less. And with that, what other principles from Scripture, not even related to animals, would come to bear upon these sorts of decisions and situations? Now, working out a theology of animals will have benefits beyond that of end-of-life decisions. And lots of examples. I'll share a number here. How should we think about things like neglecting the needs of animals, leaving a dog chained up outside all night when it's 10 below zero? How about amusements like dog fights and cock fights? Does God care about that sort of thing, one way or the other? What about running over an animal on the road when an effort could have been made to spare it? How about hunting just for the sport of it? It's not the food, it's the kill. What should we think about these large turkey farms that cram thousands of turkeys into such cramped quarters? Years ago in the movie industry, it was not all that common in filming cowboy shows, for instance, to drive a herd of horses off a cliff just for the effect. Can something like that be justified for human amusement? Terry and I did end up getting another dog, though I had sworn that we never would again, but we did. We obtained a puppy from an animal rescue. It had been part of a litter that had been dumped off along the side of a road down in Kentucky. What about something like that? What should we think about abandoning animals that require our care? I saw a video this week of a dirt biker having his trail blocked by a moose. The moose warned him. Instead of taking another route, he pulls out a pistol and shoots the moose and leaves the moose there to suffer just so that he can continue on his little motorcycle. Does God care about something like that, one way or the other? But where does that take us? You know, why would we find the killing of a moose more disturbing than that of killing a rat in a local landfill? Are all animals equal in God's sight, or do some have a higher intrinsic value than others? And let's think of utilitarian purposes? Is it wrong to make animals pull carts and plows, use them as service dogs for the blind, experiment on them in laboratories to test medicines, raise and kill them just for food, or for that matter, domesticating them and turning them into members of the family? Or spending, you know, more money each month on pet food than what you give to charity? How should we think about such things? We've all heard examples of people who leave their millions of dollars of inheritance to a cat, or will spend, you know, $30,000 on a funeral, those sorts of things. And of course, this is, you know, we have other questions too, like how are we to relate to fish, birds, and insects? Am I morally justified to swat a mosquito or step on a spider? The thing is, and again, this is one of those personal reflection type lessons I'm trying to share here, is that I've realized that I've never worked through this sort of thing, and that I need to. And from here on, it is my desire, at least, to think about animals, whether I can get there or not. It's my desire, my pursuit, to think about animals as God thinks about them, the best I can, from whatever information may be gleaned from His Word. Not more than I should, not less than I should. So, that's what we'll be tackling next week.